Hi, this is John Waters, and you're listening to Two True Freaks. Keep on listening, or I'll have you killed.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, Friday the 13th, freaks! It's the lucky seventh chapter of the saga, The New Blood. Seeing as how Axes and Corey Feldman failed to keep a good corpse down, it's time to bring in the teenage girl with psychokinetic powers. Man, if I had a nickel for every time I had to say that.
Hello, everybody, and as ZZ Top said, slip inside my sleeping bag for Friday the 13th, part 7. I'm Chris Honeywell. This is a Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am here with, this is episode, what is it, 39?
Yeah. Who gives a fuck?
Creeping up on 40.
Just like me.
Feeling old.
Oh, stop it, you. You're younger than me.
And as you hear, I'm here with the usual crew. We've got Luke, Jack, and Eddie.
Hey, everybody. How we doing?
Chris, the hair metal hero, Tyler.
Dude, Bernie Lomax is in this fucking movie.
And Sean, Joe Anthrax Engel. I don't think I've called you Joe Anthrax in a long time.
It's been a while. I've kind of... That was the whole forum thing, and I kind of dropped that once we moved off the forums and into Facebook. So, hey, everyone.
Yeah, that's still your name in all the cover art, so.
Well, that works, too.
All the show art, so.
We're on every government watch list, thank you.
You're welcome. There we go, doing my part.
So, I feel as if we've reached a renaissance, a new beginning, or new blood, so to speak.
How we see the
franchise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Friday the 13th films, the original series, can be roughly broken down into, you know, three film blocks, roughly, and two or three film blocks. And this, along with Jason Lives before it and Friday the 13th Part 8 after it, form a nice block of just films that are very similar in a lot of ways, even though they have a lot of differences. And starting with the changes that were wrought to the series with Friday the 13th Part 6, we build on that here with a lot of supernatural elements and a good bit of humor. And it's a lot of fun, this one. This is one of the first ones I ever saw. This was the second one I ever saw. And it's one, if it's on, I'm going to sit there and watch it. Even though the DVD is 10 feet away from me, I'm going to sit there and watch it on TV.
Yeah, we've come a long way from the first Friday the 13th. That's a sure thing.
Yeah, they've definitely fallen into, you know, being very comfortable with filming stuff. There's no real, you know, it's almost formulaic how they get things.
Oh, yeah. Well, by now, yes, it certainly is.
You know, I like the, you know, also about this film, the one thing that I took away from it, this is perhaps even more so than the last movie, the most 80s of the Friday the 13th movies that we've seen so far.
And yes, really 80s.
Screams. Yeah. The 1980s, from like the leather or the jean jacket with the knit sweater on the
yes.
male protagonist, to the feathered hair of all the girls in there. Just it's
the weird Robert Vaughn like shirt.
the worst in the jean jacket and the knit sweater is the girl that's wearing jeans and a jean jacket.
Mm-hmm. The Canadian tuxedo.
There you go.
Except we're not in Canada.
Canadian
tux or high school girl in 1988. You make the call.
And so many of the girls in mom pants, those sort of high water baggy, you know, flared pants. Holy cow.
Like pubescent girls and dressed like kind of like school. It was almost like the 80s version of Little House on the Prairie. You know, it had this weird little farm girl look to it. You know what I mean? Like little pink frilly sweater type thing.
But the other really tight jeans. Yeah, but you know the other really 80s thing that I took note of? They're all drinking orange slice. Like, yes, yeah. Motherfucker, right there.
Orange slice was the shit when it first came out, and then it was just like the novelty of it wore off, and it was just sickly sweet.
Yeah.
See, it's sad that, you know, that Friday the 13th couldn't get, you know, the sort of Reese's Pieces product placement promotion.
But I was expecting little Carol Ann to be placing Reese's Pieces for Jason. I was like, oh, maybe they'll be pals.
Yeah, that was another thing that I noticed in the film. The girl that they got to do the little flashback sequence of, you know, killing her dad at the beginning, she definitely had that sort of Heather O'Rourke look.
Yeah.
I thought she died a little while back, because I don't know whether she had died prior to making this movie, because it's obviously a different actress, but she certainly has the look of Heather O'Rourke, and I know she died during the making of Poltergeist 3, I think.
Yeah,
This came out afterwards, and, you know, I'm not going to check the internet, because I'm, well, lazy, and it'll screw up the call, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
No, Tina's an interesting character, and I like that building off of Tommy as kind of an action hero in the last film, that we get another protagonist that is not just the victim that happens to be a little bit smarter, a little bit less stupid than everybody else. You know, Tina has the active power to take on Jason Voorhees. This one in pre-production was nicknamed, you know, Jason versus Carrie.
Yeah.
And that is a very apt way to describe it, because she uses her powers a lot like Carrie. And the interesting upshot of that is you can really see where the money went in this film.
Yep.
It's in all the effects, because they sure as hell didn't pay the actors. They sure as hell didn't.
No, they didn't.
Or anything like that. I mean, we got a whole nother round of flashbacks to the previous film, because as we've said, flashbacks are cheap.
And now it's just pure. You know, now today when they do, like, last week on Game of Thrones, it's like a nicely edited thing. But this is like the old fashioned, you know, TV two-parter.
Yeah.
You know, just chopped.
Yeah, they just basically put random clips of the previous movies in the blender and then just spewed them out on the editing table.
Yeah. Edited them together. Yeah.
Actually, what's funny is that I'm sorry. Go ahead, Hero.
I was going to say, I'm just glad that we got somebody that can match Jason, finally.
Yeah, it is nice to see a protagonist that isn't just, you know, a screamer who runs away, or like you said, Luke, you know, someone who is not quite as stupid as everyone else in the film.
Or Corey Feldman, or grown-up Corey Feldman, yeah, Thomas Dolby, or something.
Yeah, it's good to see, you know, it's good to see someone who can actually has a chance of taking on Jason. And, one of the things I liked about this movie is we finally get a permanent person playing Jason. You know, we get a person who's going to play Jason for like the next three or four movies, I think.
Next three movies, yeah.
Through Jason X.
Oh, no, well, four movies, you're right. Next three, so it's four movies total, yeah. Yeah, and Kane Hodder, I like that he gets a credit and everything. And, you know, Hodder is the only, him and Ken Krasinger are really the only ones that people remember playing Jason Voorhees. And, you know, they make a point here in the makeup for Jason of having the mask really be embedded in his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the idea being that, okay, if he's sitting under this lake for some indeterminate amount of time, and it's obviously a decent amount of time because Forrest Green has gone back to being Crystal Lake again. So I don't know how long it is, but he's been sitting there in this lake for that long. It's like, well, it would, you know, his flesh would have started rotting and it would have started to, you know, merge together. But, you know, Hodder really, really shines once the mask is off. I mean, he's menacing as all hell in his traditional garb. But, I mean, he does a really good job, not only the physical side of it, but the suit acting when he's underneath the appliances when the mask is blown off.
Mm-hmm. I'll admit, you know, for gore
best
effects,
actor in the movie.
Yeah.
I will give you that, you know.
Everybody else is it's poor man's Robert Vaughn, poor man's Jim Carrey.
That's Bernie Lomax, damn it. It's Bernie Lomax.
You might remember me from such films as...
No one remembers any of the people from other
films. Hey, it's just like, hey, you know...
Yeah, I don't remember any, or I'd start naming them off.
Well, you know, Silverman.
Lar Park Lincoln, who played Tina, I mean, she's from Knott's Landing.
What?
She was on Knott's Landing?
I didn't watch Knott's. I was a Days guy. We've already gone over this.
I didn't watch Knott's Landing either, but I can read Wikipedia with the best of them. Actually, the funny story with Lar Park Lincoln is that after she did Friday the 13th, she went on an audition for another horror film, and they wouldn't release what the name of the horror film was. But her agent said, hey, you know, you've done a Friday the 13th, you can do another horror film. So she went and auditioned for it. And as she's auditioning, she goes, wait a minute, is this a Friday the 13th movie? Like, I've done one of these. And it turned out it was, in fact. I think it was Jason Goes to Hell that she auditioned for after already being in one.
Oops.
Yeah. This film also really, one of the things I more so than the other ones, we introduce our characters and then they are dispatched incredibly rapidly because the finale this time is that much more involved. We really need to shuffle these people off to Buffalo
right
as efficiently as possible. And so we get to some things that they shouldn't be hilarious, but are the prime suspect, of course, being, as you alluded to, Chris, the sleeping bag, the greatest murder of all time in the entire series.
At this point, I wasn't going to see Friday the 13th movies in the theater, but all my friends were, and I remember this one just because they all came back and they're like, dude, he just destroys this girl in a sleeping just a swing. And there was a movie with a mutated grizzly bear that had a similar
prophecy
yeah. had yep. a similar scene in it. And yeah, this was the big takeaway for all my friends in high school when they went to see this movie.
But Prophecy was kind of, you know, you could tell that it was, you know, on a wire and it was swung in there by a crane. And this one looked yes. more real. This one looked,
this yeah, like, this looked like he was
picked her up.
It
and
was
did it.
Kane Hodda picking up a sleeping bag full of 200 pounds of fake blood.
Yeah.
And having to swing it. Well, that's the cut down. The cut down, he only whacks it once. If you watch the uncut footage, he's whacking it and he's getting tired and you can see him like shrug like he's getting pissed off and he has to keep going until he breaks it.
But I mean, that's, you know what, but again, what's the mantra we've had on these films going all the way back to our first show? If something is simple and effective, it works. That scene sticks with you. It's a stupid, silly effect. Like you just said, it's a sleeping bag filled with fake blood. Kane Hodda sells it, and it looks fantastic.
I mean, he's a big guy, and he pulls her. I don't know if they had a little, maybe some people with a wire helping him, but that's a real actress when he pulls her out of the tent. You know, she's wiggling around, and it's a real actress, and he's just walking, you know, at a fast walk and dragging her. So that instantly gives you an idea of how much strength the character is supposed to have. And then you see there's just a quick cut when he has a sleeping bag when you're paying attention to it. But in the cut of the film, it looks like there's a body in there. I was surprised that you said it was a bag of blood instead of like maybe a mannequin and some bags of blood, because it looked like
Well, you know, you think
pretty
about
realistic.
Yeah, well, the liquid movement, it looks like she's squirming around, and then when he snaps it, it's just all the weight just goes to the bottom. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That always reminds me of the defenestration from 4 when he throws the girl out the window and her back hits the frame of the car.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't want to die that way. No.
No, neither do I.
Well, you see, it's funny because I always expect these movies, and it's more the Freddy movies were more like, let's see how crazy we can get with killing people. But the Jason movies, it's just every once in a while you get a guy who's doing handstands and gets bisected.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of times it's not like stunt killings. It's just like he just takes them out. This one, like you're saying, he's in a hurry.
Yeah.
It's Christmas night. He's got a lot of work to do.
Well, you know, and it's just using anything you can find. He kills the mousy girl with the 90 degree angle, you know, from wood shop.
Yeah. It's classic, like, you know,
I never look at my angle anymore without thinking about it. I could decapitate a girl with this, apparently.
The classic 90s girl, mousy girl, who's like, I'm gonna be hot and sexy.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah, well,
it's like we all know the key to being hot and sexy. It's take your bra off. Everybody.
Take your glasses off and put lipstick on.
And
let your hair down.
Your hair out.
It's just, it's what's his name? Shaken. Eddie Money. Shaken video.
Don't badmouth the money man.
You know, lonely is a night when you find yourself alone.
That's Billy Squire.
Oh.
Yeah, but you know, when the heart rules the mind.
Stop.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
There will be no GTR on this podcast. I swear it.
Oh, God.
It's a long play.
Yeah.
If anyone does a GTR long play, they need to get punched repetitively.
You know what? We'll do GTR and long play for April Fool's Day.
We'll do GTR, and it'll be a three-episode special. One will be G, one will be T, and one will be R.
No. We do GTR for Media Masochist. Anyway, Hero, there was a scene this movie made me think of you. When the girls swimming in the lake, and we get the underwater perv cam.
Hey.
Yeah. That's a pretty pervy cam too.
I know. Well, in 6 we went from no nudity at all to
hello.
Just 12 minutes into the running time, we have a sex scene. It's like, thank you, applaud you, sir.
They realized where the money was being made, and they said, yeah, we need to have more TNA in the film, and. God bless them. They delivered.
Adopt, adapt, and approve. Motto of the round table.
I can't believe you're equating the Knights of the Round Table and the Mort d'Arthur to Friday the 13th, but there you go.
They do have bladed instruments in both of them.
I guess
that's
so.
True.
Yeah. Also, this bit in here, Chris, made me think of you, Chris Honeywell, the body Tetris at one point when he's just...
Yes. It's a nice severed headbutt, too.
Yeah, headbutt!
I was sitting there going myself, I'm like, if I was doing for a commentary for this, I'd be like, oh, that's how you get some head.
Severed headbutt got 3 exclamation marks in my notes here. I was very excited when I saw that part.
Yeah. I mean, I think right here, it's just demonstrating at this point, in post-6, we're just having fun with this. Mm-hmm. No one is taking this all that seriously, but it's... You know, but we do, like we said, you assemble a rudimentary story, you bring together a cast, you shoot it, you put your effects in, and you just have fun with it.
Friday the 13th was a middle finger to the critics, too.
To be fair, though, and I mean, not that I'm going to try to gild the lily here or anything, at least you get, I mean, the protagonist in this, you know, at least you get some of her backstory, you know, and... Her story is a lot more interesting than most of the other protagonists outside of Tommy in Part 4.
There's something to work with in this one, and work with in the future, which they were trying to do with Corey Feldman Dolby, but it wasn't really working. It was coming out really cheesy. This gives it a little more, and you know, it's sort of the same direction that the Freddy franchise had to go in, where it's less like, we got to get some people who can...
Yeah.
Leverage on him. Yeah. And
it helps that from the jump, you are instantly invested in her story, not just from the fact that she accidentally killed her dad, but the fact that now she's working with a psychiatrist who's a total fucking cock knocker that you're waiting for him to die.
You want him to die so bad and over such a long period of time.
Because he's trying to be manipulative. He's trying to use...
Oh, he wants his book, yeah. He wants to get his ESP on tape. You know, and he's doing the actor thing. He's sort of like, maybe that was their rip on a director or something, because it's like what directors would do. They, you know, they'll psych out their actors to get the performance they want. And he was definitely winding her up to try to get her to do a little psychokinesis. But obviously, he's never seen Scanners, or he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Carrie.
I mean, I mean, all seriousness, I had a couple of tenets that I lived by, and one of them in high school was I was always nice to the quiet girls.
Oh.
I was like, because if prom goes down and shit gets real, I don't want to be John Travolta in that mess.
It's always.
I wouldn't want to be John Travolta. Period.
In general.
Always good to be nice to the quiet ones, because someday they might be in a bell tower, you know, and they hit the scope and they go, "Oh, there's Luke," and then they just move on to
the next candy. You
know? I'm gonna drop a little knowledge bomb on you guys right now.
Luke gave me a Twinkie.
Believe it or not, I was the quiet one for a long time.
I was a quiet one, like until like middle school, high school. I was
same with me.
Quiet kid.
I can honestly say I was probably in middle school. I was, but that was just because it was all the psychopathic thoughts running through my head. Once I got to high school, I became much more outgoing. But anyway, and Sean is still the quiet one, as we can see.
Can I do a quick tangent here, Luke?
Sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
quick tangent, Luke. Tina's mom, did you recognize her?
Oh, I did.
From the other night. Yes.
Whoa. It's Susan Blue, isn't it? From
now yeah, drop it. Come on. G1 Transformers. Let's go.
Oh, she's RC.
There you go.
Yeah, she's RC, and then she would she voices female Transformers in a lot of different Transformers stuff. Yeah, it's like her and what's the other? Tara Strong. Those are the two. Yeah. The two female voice actors most people know.
Didn't they want every mom to look like a mix of Dinah Shore and Dr. Joyce Brothers in the 80s or something?
Essentially, yeah. This is the stereotypical 80s mom. I mean, she's got the sort of 80s stylish, almost mullet cut, and the big mom pants and the shoulder pads.
They were trying to work some stuff in the script in this. Not that they really did much of it, but there was some subtext with the mom, and I thought maybe that, you know, the psychiatrist was going to be moving in on the mom too a little bit, or had tried to. And no. I think he might have had a chance, but somewhere in the first couple days at camp, he blew his chance with mom.
Yeah, yep.
I think it was the point where he put her in front of Jason.
Yeah, that would have been that. Yeah, that would have definitely been a deal breaker.
Yeah, for most women, anyway. You know two things that are also interesting kind of going forward here is that, you know, you guys were saying, and we were talking about that, it's good that they did this in the Nightmare films as well as the Friday the 13th films, was getting antagonists or protagonists that could stand up to the antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
This got to the point where, what was it? It's, I think Dynamite did the sequel to Freddy versus Jason. They did Freddy versus Jason versus Ash as a Conqueror.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
But then when they did, now Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash was based on the script that was never filmed, and it's actually quite good. Well, Dynamite then did an original sequel to that, which was Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash, called The Nightmare Warriors. And the point of this was that basically all of the surviving heroes from the Friday and Nightmare films, so Tina Shepherd and the Dream Master Girl from Nightmare 4 and 5, and all the other characters that from these later sequels all got together, kind of like the horror crossover Justice League, because they all had the powers with which to fight these other, to help Ash fight Freddy and Jason. So clearly that idea has legs, because it's still, I mean, people are still running with it as recently as a couple of years ago when that series came out.
Well, that sounds like it would be a perfect idea to do one of these movie mashups. I mean, that sounds like a brilliant way to sort of revitalize these tropes, these old films, and bring it into a new era. And yeah, and I bet you could even probably get some of these actors and actresses.
And for us, it would work, but there's no way they'd ever do it.
That's why that one works as a comic. You could do Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash as a movie. I think you could get by on Bruce Campbell's likability on a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, you could do it, but it'd be the continuity of it is a tough sell. I think, Hero, you're right on the money. But
The fact that they're not going to want to retread the past. That's why. That's why we're going to be getting another Friday reboot at some point, you know?
Not to tangent again, but has anybody heard if there's any truth to that there's going to be a Evil Dead TV show with Bruce Campbell?
I've heard that rumor.
That rumor too, but I haven't heard if it's true or not.
I'll believe it when the episode is airing.
Right.
Yeah, because they've been talking about Evil Dead 4 for ever since Evil Dead 2 2 was filmed.
And I love Bruce Campbell, but the dude's been hitting the Twinkies like Lawrence Fishburne. So I don't think we need to go there.
I think he's comfortable with what he's doing now. You know, just being sort of, you know, after Burn Notice and all that, I think he's just comfortable not having to be Sam Raimi's little bitch. So I think he's fine with doing his own thing, and you know, his little cameo at the end of the remake of Evil Dead was, you know, a nice hat tip to it. But yeah, I don't think he's probably gonna get associated with anything Evil Dead anytime soon.
Yeah. But for listeners, I do recommend both of those series. They are available in trade if you want to go to Amazon.com and see if you can pick up Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash and Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash Nightmare Warriors. I'd heartily recommend them. Cool. The other interesting aspect, again, about going forward is think about Jason as this film starts in the present day of the story. He is chained up, sunk at the bottom of Crystal Lake, incapacitated. Where does the film end? Jason sunk incapacitated at the bottom of Crystal Lake. So it does a good job of coming in, telling its story that is compelling and interesting, keeps your interest for 88 minutes, and then resets it to say, okay, so now we haven't screwed with anything. We can bring Jason back from the lake again in the next movie, which is exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. So it keeps everything. It doesn't screw with the status quo. It's not a status quo change as they'd say on Hate Kids Comics, you know.
Now it's, you know, now that you mention that, it's kind of like you guys talked about this on Star Wars Monthly Monday a while back, the Boba Fett story, where Boba Fett comes out of the Sarlacc, has his little, you know, adventure, you know, deals with some people, gets remembered, and at the end of the story, he's back in the Sarlacc pit. So you're able to do this adventure with the character, but at the end, it resets so that if you want to do something different with him, you just have to pull out the same thing. Oh, well, he's back at Crystal Lake. He's in the lake. We pull him out, and he's good to go. So,
yeah. Can we talk about how he actually ends up in the bottom of the lake?
Yes.
Because it is so wackadoo-doo.
Okay.
I mean, I understand, you know, we get the foreshadowing at the beginning of Tina trying to get her dad out of the lake. And yeah. Holy shit, she resurrects Jason, which is, that's a great way to bring him back. You know, it makes perfect sense for a movie as crazy as this. And then at the end, she finally does bring her dad back. And you're going, what the hell is this?
Yeah. And he's really like no worse for wear. That you know? He's not a bloated, like, I want my cake Bedelia.
He was supposed to look like that. He was supposed to look...
I want my cake, Bedelia.
Where's my fucking cake? Yeah.
There is a crossover we need to do.
Yeah.
We will be getting to.
We gotta hit that too. Someday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, but
hit it hard.
Oh yeah. There's a porn star that actually has "Hit It Harder" written right above her. Claire Danes. Her dad was supposed to look either ghostly or like zombified, and the PA or the assistant producer, somebody said no.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Carl Beekler had a lot of fights on his hand with this one, like every other Friday movie. Almost every death was drastically cut down. You know, the lawn trimmer scene, there was entrails wrapped around that thing at the end of it.
Yeah.
The guy that I've dubbed Vagina Face, who gets the hatchet to the face, that was, you know, his head goes back and then there's a big blood squirt that we don't get to see. The mousy girl, her death is pretty much left to your imagination, but that's not what, you know, they had filmed more of it. Yeah. That scene is surprisingly tense, by the way, for a Friday movie.
Consider, especially a Friday movie at this late in the game, too.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, the girl who gets defenestrated in this one, that was reshot because the initial thing they had was just not working out. She was just going to get bisected. I'm always a sucker for a bitch getting thrown through a window, but hey, that's because I watched Invasion USA too many times as a kid. You could almost, if you took the nudity out of this one, you could almost, it's almost PG-13.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, this was one that was, like I said, I saw this and 5 on television quite a lot. USA, this was the two they would air. So I saw this on cable TV long before I ever saw it on cut. And you're right. Once you take the nudity out, you can get away with quite a lot in this, in its current form. And the next one's kind of similar to that, too. But
it's comic booky. I mean, yes. By the end of it, it's full tilt comic book, you know.
Yeah, which is in and of itself pretty awesome. The hand waving no prize I always employed for Tina's dad is that it's not actually Tina's dad. It's a psychic manifestation of how she remembers him.
Right.
I will take that.
You know, so that's a no prize. But you know what? We're watching a movie where a psychic girl kills her dad and then 10 years later resurrects Jason Voorhees from the bottom of a lake where he was left after getting hit with a boat motor with a chain wrapped around his neck. So we're willing to make certain, you know, assumptions in order to move the plot forward.
Yeah, I like that a lot better, because then at the end it's her taking him out and not some other force.
Right.
Is, you know,
it's
you know,
better than just a random bolt of lightning.
Yeah. Bringing him back? Come on, I like that.
Thank well, that was trying to, yeah, that was all very James.
Thankfully, it didn't turn him into the Flash, so that's always good.
Yeah, well, Jason moves pretty damn fast already, okay, you know?
Well, he's at this point, he's full tilt. Oh, he's behind me, now he's in front of me.
Yeah. I have a couple of notes, are just, how the hell did he get there?
Because he's Jason, man.
Jason. The other thing I do like is that after we're seven films in, we finally get a spring-loaded cat that is, again, an actual cat. Yeah. I like that.
And with a great reveal after that of, oh, shit, there's a severed head on the bed.
Yeah.
How did we not see that? so good.
It's just a lot of fun. This one, it gets overlooked sometimes because a lot of people really have a lot of fond memories of 6, and a lot of folks remember 8 just from the ridiculous title. Anything else? I mean, I like 8, but this one is really one of the better films in the series.
What was 8? Chasing Jason?
Jason takes Manhattan.
Oh, Jason God. Takes Canada.
Yeah.
Doubling for Manhattan.
Takes Vancouver.
That's the
Mountain
one with the Muppets in it, right?
Yes. And what's her name from the Avengers? Diana Rigg, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
But this one, again, this is one that some doesn't get the kind of people remember. Oh, yeah, the one where he fights the psychic. People remember it. But I think a lot of times people forget that this one's actually quite good, especially, again, as I said, for 1988. We're part 7 of a film series. Overall, it hangs together real well. It's really watchable. Like you said, you have an interest in the characters involved.
Yeah.
I'll
say that, you know, I enjoyed this more than I did the last one because, you know, I was just disappointed about the turn from Tommy as sort of the action hero to Tommy as sort of the kind of meek, you know, let everyone else do the stuff for him in that one. This one had an aggressive protagonist who could hold her own against Jason, which I really liked. You don't get to see that very often in the films. So the fact that you've got a person who can, in her own way, take on Jason is a nice switch up in the film, and it worked well for me.
I enjoy it too. I still take 6 over it just because, you know, I'm that guy. But hey,
you're always that guy.
So I mean, I don't know. Is there anything else we need to say at this point about our?
What else can you say?
It's part 7. I told my girlfriend asked me. She goes, "What are you gonna be talking about?" And I said, "Friday the 13th, part 7." She goes, "There was 7 of them." I go, "Like, there's like 11 of them."
Yeah, technically, well, 12 now if you consider the remake, the Michael Bay one, because once they're X and then
it was X and then Freddy versus Jason. Yeah, so. And then the remake. I mean, that's the thing. There's a reason why, you know, these films continued to get made, and it's because they're, you know, first off, they're profitable, and secondly, there's the nuggets of solid story engines there. You can continue to make them because the concept still works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this is this is true of all the long lasting, you know, 80s, 70s and 80s horror franchises, and Friday's a prime example of that.
Oh yeah, it's a popcorn movie through and through.
Oh, no doubt.
And I enjoy it greatly.
Same here.
You gotta love the geek show.
Yeah. Oh, and the poor geek guy in this. Can we talk about what the fuck is her name? The blonde bitch. Oh my god. You waiting the whole fucking movie for her to just get throttled?
Snatchy McEighty pants. Yeah.
Snatchy
McEighty's pants.
Oh my god. I know we've already got our explicit tag, but she is the definition of a fucking cunt. Oh my god.
Well, it's the kind that doesn't even exist. That's her character. I mean.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh no. There's girls who do, like, things that she does, but just like the. I mean, she's such an exaggeration. She's just like, and that was an 80s thing where they would be like every other girl. They'd be like, "Hi, Jenny," so you know that just like, and there's movies with it today, but they're always like, you know, they always have a sort of wink to the exaggeration. But in those 80s movies, they were always just so, you know, basically, if they existed in real life, they would be getting punched daily. Daily. Other girls would be there. They would have just like they would have to be wearing wigs because other girls would have torn their hair out. You know, people can't resist punching someone who's in front of them just going, hi there, loser.
I know this is going to get me into a lot of trouble, but her name is Melissa. That is a total bitch name. I apologize because I know there are people related to people on this network that are named Melissa.
I know some very nice Melissas, but in movie terms,
I
don't know what
Melissa, Keith Diamond. It's like Melissa or Jennifer is always like a bitchy name.
Yeah, in movies. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I'd have to bone up on my King Diamond to find out what his feelings were on that name. But I know that was in.
What do you think?
Yeah,
I got the reference.
King Diamond.
Came up on long play for some of his.
It's just like, you know, if you have the last name of Phelps, unless it's a Mission Impossible movie, you're probably a douchebag in a movie, you know, a rich white douchebag. No, except again for Mission Impossible, no good guys ever have the last name Phelps.
You see, in the Phelpses that I knew that I grew up with were poor and really nice, like smart. You know, they were the smart nerdy kids that had the full beards in high school.
Yeah, but that's not in horror movies. That's not in 80s horror movies. 80s horror movies. Those guys are assholes.
Yeah. Hey, we got some token black people in this one.
Yeah.
That's true.
And and throwback to 5 with token blacks getting dispatched rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so wrong. When I get my horror movie made,
Not like everybody else didn't get this.
No, it's like
it was definitely equal in that regard.
They were just in the queue.
There was no discrimination. It wasn't like, we've got to get them and everyone else survives. No,
Jason is nothing if not ecumenical.
Yeah, Jason did not like kill them with a watermelon or something like that.
A water hose.
Slice their throats open with a broken bottle of Colt 45.
Yeah, he's very no nonsense. Sorry, he does not discriminate on
that. That would explain all the orange soda, though. I apologize. It was too easy. I had.
Is that our out?
No.
No.
Oh Jesus. But no, I mean, you know, all you know, racial baiting aside, like I said, it's just
wait on race baiting.
Yes, but
it's just such a total blast watching this. And you know, the films have been slowly transitioning into party movies, and they made the complete switch with 6, but now we're just so much into it. Just the embracing of the party movie attitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, at 88 minutes, it's not long enough for anyone to really start their mind to wander too much. You know, if you come in late, all you miss was the flashback, you know, and it's like, okay, I'm up to speed. She's a psychic girl. Okay, I'm good. Let's go. You know, it's not like some of these movies you watch where if you miss the first 5 minutes, you're absolutely boned for the rest of it. And, it's just to sit down and have a blast with one of your favorite adult beverages.
This is made for people to actually yell at the screen and and stuff like that. Yes. That's why you have that the bitchy girl is people. They want people to be in the audience yelling at her, throwing their popcorn at the screen at her.
You know what's even better about her death? Not only does she get the hatchet to the face, then she gets just duffed completely, just one-handed tossed, but she's in that house when that thing goes, and that house blows up good. I don't know what they use, but you see that thing shudder before it explodes. That's all. I mean, they must have spent a ton of money on that. That is one. That's a great explosion, regardless of the movie that it's in.
Yeah. I got the feeling that it might have been maybe a little bigger than they expected, too.
Limo.
That sometimes happens in movies. I mean,
yeah, that explosion is fantastic. I mean, that's you're right. An action movie, horror movie, doesn't matter. That's a fantastic explosion. I mean, they absolutely
no CGI
leveled,
there.
Yeah, they leveled the crap out of that house. I put that on like the same level as the house collapsing in 1941. For
and
just
if it was a miniature, it was a very, very nice miniature, but I don't think it was a miniature.
Oh, no, I think they blew up an actual house. I'm pretty sure. Miniature houses don't explode that well.
No.
No.
And we should know.
A little patience and a lot of glue. That's all I got to say about that.
So should we do the body count?
Oh, what are we up to now?
Very, very healthy 15.
So what were we at? 69 last time?
We were at 69, dude.
So,
yeah.
Now 84.
It's 15 if we don't count Tina's dad, which we could if we wanted to. But Jason kills 15.
Yeah. Okay. Yikes.
84.
But that's a lot.
Crossing out 69, putting in 84. Yes, yeah. Good.
It's robust.
That's right. Like 12, it's like almost 12 a film.
One of the only ways you can rate these movies, really.
Hey, it's like, you know,
Jason, it's like Jason Voorhees and Paul Kersey having a little race here so you can kill the most people.
Oh, I think Kersey's got him beat.
Kersey's going to beat him, but Jason has more films to work with, so you never know. So
Yeah. So if there's 15, 88 minute movie, that's you're getting a kill every couple minutes.
As it should be. Either a sex scene or a death.
There you go.
That's all you can sounds ask kind for. Of,
yeah.
That's what we like them here on the vault.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."